Well, thank you, everybody, for coming today and being a part of the mindfulness call. I actually wanted to start out asking a question to all of you. When you think of mindfulness, what comes to mind? So if anybody would like to unmute and share their thoughts on that.
Hi, this is Donna. I think of mindfulness as being present with your client, where you're completely connected and listening.
Yes, it's a good answer. That is a big part of it. Anyone else?
Hi, this is Patty. I think of it as being aware of your own thought processes as you're listening.
Definitely. Anyone else? Okay, I'm going to give you a very simple definition of what mindfulness is. And this is from Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's considered basically a modern-day father of commercializing what mindfulness is. Though mindfulness has obviously been around for thousands of years. And he says that it's paying attention on purpose in the moment and non-judgmentally. So what I want to do is I want to go into basically how I got introduced into mindfulness and my own experience with that. And that's going to help differentiate a little bit between what mindfulness is and meditation. And then I want to go into the coach, taking care of yourself, your skills, and how it benefits your client. And then we have some really, really good questions that came in, and I'd like to address that too. But basically, mindfulness was suggested to me several years ago after I got a concussion. I'd been practicing meditation for years. And when I got my concussion, I was told, give yourself 2 weeks, you'll feel better. After 2 weeks, I didn't feel better. So I went to the neurologist, and he said, give it 3 months, and you'll feel better. I gave it 3 months. I didn't feel better. Well, it turns out, since I had had prior concussions, I was experiencing a cumulative effect. So as I was trying to heal, I kept thinking of what I was like before I had the head injury. And I was comparing it, contrasting it, and I was getting extremely frustrated with my healing process. And that created a lot of anxiety for myself, which, of course, ended up stunting my healing process because I wasn't allowing my brain to calm down. So it was suggested to me that I took a course on mindfulness, which I didn't really understand how it was different at the time from meditation, but I decided to do it. I had been meditating with the head injury in the evenings, but I found that when I left meditation, I wasn't able to keep that space, keep that peace, keep that calm. So what I learned through the mindfulness workshop was the one thing that I hadn't done in meditation was really bring myself into full awareness with my surroundings and my body. In meditation, I was able to get into a very calm place, and almost go into the stratosphere, but not really staying in my body and staying present with things that were not just comfortable, but things that were also uncomfortable. And learning how to be present, I was able to remove my judgment of how my healing should be, of what it should look like, and I could start to actually observe and not judge. And in doing so, I was able to feel more centered through the process and, of course, accelerate the healing process that I was going through. And I found that this not only affected my healing, it also affected how I was receiving communication from other people. It's very easy for me naturally just to jump ahead and answer a question and I found that my listening skills started to sharpen. And of course, as coaches, our listening skills are really everything when we're in the coaching session. So I learned how to quiet, and I learned how to listen. And interestingly enough, when I decided to start using mindfulness in coaching, it wasn't in the context of wellness coaching, which you would think that would be a really easy place to start. I started to use it with my clients in the executive coaching context. I realized when I was hearing them that they were talking about a lot of frustrations with communication with coworkers, how they were perceiving situations. And so I used my listening skills to be able to hear where their point of frustration was and ask questions. And in doing so, I was able to ask if they'd heard about mindfulness and that skill. And some had heard of it, some had not heard of it. And we were able to integrate a couple of exercises into the coaching sessions, which they were able to work into their goals and start to develop that skill set. And in doing so, they were finding that a lot of points of tension that they had in their work relationships started to dissipate, or they started to resolve into solutions that were good for everybody. So I found it to be a really great tool, and I found that it's universal. A lot of people, when they think of mindfulness, will immediately think of it as a religion or a mystical practice, which it can be. You're going to find that in those places, but mindfulness is really universal. It's bringing ourselves back into ourselves, being aware of everything around us, and being able to experience it. So I would start out, when you're thinking of mindfulness in the coaching context, is start to think about mindfulness in your own life. And there's some simple things that you can start to do if you haven't already practiced mindfulness or been exposed to it. Probably the quickest and the easiest way to start to experience being in the present moment is doing it at a mealtime. You know, eating slowly. You know, is my mouth salivating? What does the food taste like? And just observing it. You know, is there texture to it? What's the smell like? And eating slowly and experiencing it. I was actually in the workshop, and they did this exercise with a raisin. And then afterwards, they asked everybody what their experience was. And one of the women said, "This is really hard for me because I hate raisins. So I went into this with judgment already." So she had to really work to get into the place of being able to observe and experience what it was like to eat a raisin rather than judging it. And she actually was able to experience it in a way that wasn't as negative as she had experienced before. So what I wanted to ask next, is there anybody out there right now that is using mindfulness in their coaching sessions? Okay, is there anybody out there that has any more questions about what mindfulness is?
This is Donna. I'm a school counselor right now, as well as a life coach, and I work with K through 6th grade children, so all of my work is psychosocial emotional, and I have really been aware of locking in to what they're saying and trying to be, a 6th grade experience of hurt in a friendship is, different from mine. So just
right. Locking
into what they might be feeling, where they're coming from, and truly hearing that, so I could validate and then, move forward and help the kid work through whatever they're working through. So since the coaching thing, I think I've always done that clinically, but since the coaching thing, I'm much more aware of that. So I'm trying to stay more in the moment.
So let me ask you this. Now that you are going in there with intention, to have attention, what do you notice is different when you're listening?
I think that the children are coming to their own conclusion, their own paths, because they could sense that I'm right with them. So they're getting to where they need to go in more in an efficient way, and we have this really lovely connection.
So what you brought up is, I think, a really important point, is just the fact that you're moving into that deeper listening,
mm-hmm.
and attention, that they're experiencing that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we all know when we're talking and somebody's not listening, even though they might be looking at us. We feel it.
Right.
There's an experience with that. And this is even on the phone with clients. They know if we're present somehow. So just that alone can make the difference whether you integrate exercises or not. Have you noticed that when you are present that way, do you notice that certain words might stand out more when they speak or how they say it?
Yes, I do. And I see them listening to my reactions more, you know, because we are in that sacred space. We are communicating with each other. And so I had a great session yesterday with a little girl, and we clicked in a way that we never had before, and I've worked with her in past years. So it's been an interesting awareness for me.
And what about from your perspective, because obviously your training is in patterns as well,
mm-hmm.
and obviously development of where they are at in their age. Do you feel as though being more present and letting go of judgment is able to, in your position, be more open to other possibilities rather than just how you were schooled to look at something?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I see that. And I felt that yesterday. You know, I've just been back at school for a week now, and so being very mindful of coaching techniques and the process. So yesterday was a powerful interaction, and I absolutely felt the difference.
That's really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that brings up something. There was a question on here. Let me look for it. I don't know if it was from you. It may have been from you or...
Mm-hmm.
Donna, I think that was from you. Donna Stevens?
Yes, uh-huh.
Ah!
See, and that's the struggle I had always... not always had, but often had, with my need to anticipate where we're going. And, you know, and now that I'm back doing this more often, it's a lot better. I'm able to stay where I need to stay.
Right. And I'm going to read your question because I think it's a really good question, and I think it's a very important question to explore. That you said, when coaching a client, it sometimes seems effortless for me to slip into the next question before the client is finished with their dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's from my clinical experience of anticipating the direction of a conversation, but I do know that it interrupts my pacing and flow with the client.
Mm-hmm.
So really what we're addressing here is what we touched on just a moment ago, which is how we're trained, to look at something. You know, those databases and that information for what we do, whether it's in coaching, whether it's in the therapy context, whether it's in ministry, we're taught to view something through a certain lens, which is good. Yet, being in the present moment, we need to be aware of keeping that balance, that we're not using that to create judgment. And just as you said, that you were able to see other possibilities as
mm-hmm.
a result of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's your guide, but yet we're human, and with all the knowledge that we have in the world, it's still not all the answers.
Right.
You know, we can be observant of patterns or hearing things, but it's really that deeper listening and awareness that will guide us on the questions that we ask our clients,
mm-hmm.
how we respond, or even how we see them, even how they see them.
Right.
And I think of a dear friend of mine who works in a clinical sense, who's in a hospital. So he's seeing on a regular basis addiction and pathology. And I always wondered, you know, what would it be like to view the world if you see that all day long? You know, that we need to challenge ourselves, like how much of our, like, socialization in our environment are affecting, you know, us being in the moment and letting go of our judgment and just being there observing.
Mm-hmm.
Though it's important to draw from our database now and then when it's right. But I think that was a really, really good question. Mm-hmm. So now that you're noticing this and you're seeing results when you're working with people, do you how do you feel like that has promoted growth within yourself?
Well, it's a lot more satisfying satisfying for me, because I'm letting go. I'm learning how to let go, and then to see the reaction, to see the results. It's about the results for the child, and so. It just feels good, and it's encouraging for me to be able to continue that awareness.
Now, for yourself, are you able to keep that presence in the other areas of your life?
I'm working on it. I do meditate, and, you know, I was listening to what you were saying about starting with the food thing. A lot of times my brain is running, and I will work on this a little bit better. But, yeah, meditation is the one thing that I've been doing for over 30 years. So I'm working on it.
You know, and another exercise that's popular in mindfulness is walking. Hmm. You know, feeling when your heel hits the ground, when it moves to the ball of your foot. What does that feel like? What are the sensations in your body? Just to create that awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Around you. So that's a nice exercise to try as well.
Mm. One of the things that I do with the kids is like a visualization of, you know, what do you smell? What do you feel? Do you feel the wind on your face? Do you hear the birds? You know, and sometimes when I'm walking by myself, I try to do that.
Right. And that's mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
That's mindfulness. It's like taking a black and white photograph, and then all of a sudden it becomes color.
Mm-hmm.
You get to see all the details in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do that in the coaching context, we're supporting our client in a really positive way. We're also supporting ourselves as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to look at another question here. Jan, is Jan Robertson on the call? Okay, we'll move to the next question then. Is, if I pronounce this name wrong, I apologize in advance. Laxmi? Is there a Laxmi on the call? I'm going to go ahead and read this question because I think it's important. How does one effectively deal with the initial resistance of anxiety related to mindfulness coaching? Well, the first thing that I would do is address what they think mindfulness is. You know, is there a judgment attached to it that's inaccurate? Is their definition of it different than what it is? So I would first address that and then move from there, because it's really a simple explanation. And you know, it really is a universal skill. Everybody can use it. whether it's in the secular context, whether it's in the spiritual context. And I think of it like going to the gym. That the more that you practice it, the more that you do it, it's like building a muscle. But you have to choose to use it as well. Is there a Jean on the call by any chance?
Maybe they're not unmuting themselves.
Oh, to unmute, you have to hit star 6. And that's my dog being mindful of the noise in the background. So if there's a little barking there.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, this is Lakshmi. Thank you so much for the instructions and unmuting. I joined the call a little late, and I was trying to figure out how to do this, but technologically I'm not that bright.
I'm right there with you.
Okay. All right. Thank you for responding to my question earlier. This is really helpful. Now, how do I go back to muting myself?
Well, you had a couple things, and since you're on the call, why don't we dig in a little deeper to what you asked, if that's okay
yes.
with you?
Sure, sure.
Okay, so you had talked about the initial resistance and anxiety. And,
correct.
You know, first figure out, you know, what do they think mindfulness is? So, you as a coach.
Right.
If you bump into some different ideas and knowing, you know, the simplest definition of what mindfulness is, how would you communicate that to a client?
That's a good question. I think one of the things that I would try to do is to try to make it as simple as possible in terms of you know, talking about being in the moment, being present, being aware, so more kind of tying it to self-awareness and looking within and making decisions in the present and making conscious decisions in the present.
Right.
That's the way I would look at it. In the sense, if a client says, you know, I'm anxious, you know, I'm having palpitation, I don't know why, I would sort of have them focus within and talk more about being very aware of what they're feeling and, you know, talking about it and then sort of almost like visual imagery in a way, but more in relation to their own body and what they're feeling at that moment.
Right. So if somebody is experiencing anxiety, what conclusion mm-hmm. that you could come to that that's based on? What is anxiety?
It's a combination of physical symptoms and emotions and feelings and uncertainty, and it's that sense of making judgments about something out there in relation to how you're feeling. Right?
Right. You touched on a few things there that are really important. You touched on uncertainty. And what is uncertainty? What is underlying underneath uncertainty? It's a four-letter word, by the way.
Fear.
Fear. Absolutely. But where does fear come from? And I'm not talking about in the fight or flight sense, like I got to get out of here, somebody's going to attack me.
Right.
I'm talking
right.
outside of that. Where does fear come from?
I think it comes from for the unknown. It comes from within for the unknown. And it's in a way a complex emotion because fear is something that is used very lightly, but when people really talk about, you know, the sense of fear that they feel within, that ties in sometimes to so many other things. Fear of being
right.
judged, fear of, you know, whether it's fear of being judged or fear of success or anything, it doesn't matter. It's that sense of, you know, it can be complex.
So if we're in fear, are we in the present moment?
we're not in the present moment at all, I think, as far as fear goes, because it's always worrying about something in the future based on something in the past, probably.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah, fear is not being present. And cool. Fear is something I always experience before I have to speak publicly. Anxiety. I get a little bit of anxiety. And I can't wait until the first 2 minutes is done because I know I'll be connecting with the material and in the moment. But it's that little tiny lag time there
mm-hmm.
where I start thinking outside of the moment, and that's where I get in trouble.
Right. Well, you know, one of the ways for me, though, one of the ways I present a lot as well, and one of the ways for me to sort of address that when I'm, you know, in a group of people, I always acknowledge that fear, and that's bringing me back to the present. You know, when I say, you know what, I'm getting a little anxious. This is a larger crowd than I expected, and that just
right.
calms me down instantly. The minute I can claim it and say it and share that with the group, then I feel
right.
calm, and then I can move on.
So you're using the skill of observation at that
right.
point. So you're
yes.
not being in denial. And I think that this is also really important to address, is in mindfulness, it's not being in a state of, oh, this is comfortable all the time. It's being present even if something is uncomfortable. Now, when you are able to put not having judgment on whatever that experience is and observe it, you're able to look at it and not necessarily have a conversation with it.
Mm-hmm.
You can be in a moment where you get really great news and you just jump up and down and then you trip over something. It feels really great what you're experiencing at that moment, but you just got completely lost into it and you ended up tripping and breaking your leg because you weren't completely present of your surrounding. You can also be in a moment too where you hear something, you don't like it, it might start to trigger, and rather than observing it, you start to have a conversation with it. And what happens when you start having a conversation with fear? It gets really big, and it escalates. And you get hyper-focused on whatever that thing is, and you start seeing the good stuff that you might be able to grab onto at that moment. So that observation skill not only works for having something that's uncomfortable or negative escalate into like a reaction or chaos, but it also can keep you grounded when something exciting happens. And that's not to say don't experience joy, because I think it's great. And quite honestly, I think jumping up and down every once in a while is welcome. But it allows us to be more connected to what else is going on, and especially if there are other people that we are interacting with at that moment. So you talked about the three things. You want to know what the three most important elements in mindfulness coaching would be?
Right.
And in my opinion, that's obviously attention. Putting yourself in a place of non-judgment, which we're taught to do as coaches anyways, and observation, observing what is going on, the details.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any other questions pertaining to that?
I do, as a matter of fact. You talked about attention and observation and being non-judgmental, correct?
Yes.
So essentially these elements that we talk about in mindfulness is exactly some of the salient features of a counseling session or a counselor adopts, correct?
I would hope so.
So how does mindfulness differ from, or I shouldn't say differ, but what is the distinguishing feature between mindfulness in coaching and in clinical practice? Is there a difference?
I would say being present and being in a place of mindfulness is not any different.
Okay.
Now, the way you're approaching and working with your clients may be a little different. If you're in a clinical practice, you know, there may be some things in your database that you need to draw from.
Right.
I would argue that where it may become an issue for the counselor is if they start attaching judgment to it.
Mm.
You know, I've heard other therapists talk about, you know, possibilities and growth, and I've heard other therapists that feel, you know, that I don't know if they've been doing it so long, but they're like, well, that's the pattern, that's the way it is. And, you know, they may have just allowed themselves to get into a place where, you know, that default system is really comfortable. So, you know, it's important to be able to draw from our knowledge and from our database. But when we attach to it and attach to the outcome of what it should look like, whether it's healing or whether it's moving forward in a goal, that's where we as coaches and practitioners could get ourselves in a narrow focus that may work against ourselves and who we're working with, if that makes sense.
Mm, yeah, that does. Thank you.
So I'd say it's about balance. It's really about balance. And I didn't know if Jean was on the call. And remember, it's *6 to unmute.
So this is Dawn again. I have another question in regard to what you just said. So when you're working with a client as a coach, you know, you're talking about the patterning concept, but if you're working with a client in coaching and they say something that does follow, you know, a pattern of whatever it is that they're dealing with, it's if you normalize that, and like Lakshmi just said about acknowledging something, if you normalize that for them and say, yeah, you know, that's quite common, and then you keep on moving with them, that doesn't interrupt the flow of the presence, does it? Does my question make sense?
Well, it sounds like the way that you are communicating it is from a place of not being judgmental.
Right. Okay.
And I think that's really what the difference is.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I just had a thought from what Donna was saying is that I think the challenge or the one thing that we need to do with care is to recognize that while we are normalizing it or while we are practicing mindfulness with a client, that we don't end up discounting what they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that what you're saying, Donna?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
To acknowledge it and to, you know, and let them, because I think when you acknowledge it, you're also reconfirming that you're in this relationship with them because you're hearing what they say and you're saying something back to them, giving them something back, but
and validation
forward.
Validation is really important in our relationships, whether it's with a client or whether it's in our personal relationships. But you can do that in observation,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to judgment. So you can validate, and it's in a place of observation where it creates an invitation for more connection in whatever that conversation is.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that is really important. Observing and not judging doesn't mean not speaking.
Right.
Yeah, thank you.
And for some of us, it means not speaking at all, learning how not when to speak. the pause is really important in coaching. And so I didn't hear Jean on the call, so I am going to see if Wanda is on the call. And you would star 6 to unmute. She asked the question, how do you keep a mindful coaching session on track? And what when clients explore, is it often about the future and what they want and how to go about it? That's a good question. You would do it like any other coaching session. You would have a beginning, a middle, and end. So you would obviously have some structure to it. But whether it's talking about the future, talking about goals, while they're talking about it as a coach, exploring when you're talking about it, you know, what are they aware of? How do they feel about it? Is there something going on in their body? Does it bring up fear? Are they able to observe it? Questions like that, if you are talking about creating goals and what that would look like, you can see what they're experiencing in the moment as they're discussing it and kind of move through that using your coaching toolbox. The other question that she posed was, while staying in the present and being authentic to our true selves, how do we learn from the past and integrate ourselves? That's not an easy question. It's not black and white. But for somebody who is curious and moving forward, and I'm talking about the coach, not the coachee at this point, though this is universal, is when they find themselves in a similar situation and they go into the skill of using mindfulness, they can start to ask themselves, well, am I responding different, even though this is a similar situation? What does it feel like? Am I able to stay, you know, really stay more present and non-judgmental? And what are the fruits of that? And, you know, the questions about how do we learn from the past and integrate it into our new selves, I think that those answers will start to come to that person the more that they actually practice that and start to observe being present rather than going into a reaction or a judgment. And if there's any other questions relating to that, you know, please ask at this time, because that's actually a very interesting question.
So that's really about charging in neutral and keeping your own stuff out of it.
It is. But, of course, anybody who's in the helping profession, I would argue, is naturally reflective.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a catalyst that brings us into the field that we're in, whether it's positive or negative. And so as we reflect on ourselves, you know, how we are at coaches, really being available, really being present, and like you said, keeping our own stuff out of it, how are we able to take those skills of being in the present and translate them into the other areas of our life? So we can actually see the positive results that come out of it, not just in the coaching session. And this really is self-care for the coach.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other questions about that? Because I think self-care for the coach is really, really important.
Yep. I agree.
It's easy to lose your reserve.
Right. I think that's really very, very important. One of the things that I do both for myself and my staff, is we are always engaged in peer supervision as a team, or I participate in other peer supervision groups, because that is so critical, the self-care element.
Right. And this is where you can take your coaching skills and integrate them with mindfulness and self-care, is when you start experiencing coach burnout, what's the first thing you know? You've tapped out of what? Reserve.
Right.
Now, mindfulness, you know, we allow ourselves to be in the present moment. We're not taking something from the past. We're not taking something from the future to fuel us. But right then and there. So it's easier to maintain a reserve. You're mm-hmm. not trying to tap into something else to keep something else going. So for the coach that may be experiencing some lack of reserve, whether it's building your coaching practice, marketing and trying to get new clients, you know, that takes a tremendous amount of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Taking time to allow yourself to be present and experience and observe is sometimes all you really need to get back on track. And then integrate, how do I keep that as a practice in my life? You know, even if it's just starting out 5 minutes or 10 minutes a day, at the morning of the day when you get out of bed, and getting out of bed instead of lying in bed, because lying in bed, it's easy to kind of just float out and space out, but actually mm-hmm. getting out with the intention of having attention, whether it's sitting in your chair, you know, slowly drinking your coffee, you know, and then start to build on that as that skill, that muscle starts to get stronger. Are there any questions?
I have a question. I don't know whether it's a relevant question. If it isn't, I can understand if you don't address it in this call. My question is, for those of us in the group that are participating in this, what percentage of your work is in coaching versus counseling, traditional clinical counseling?
For the students that are on the call?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. What about for you as a presenter? Are you predominantly a coach, or you do both?
I am predominantly a coach. I'm also ordained, so I don't do therapy,
though
I do elements of ministry.
Okay.
But therapy, that's out of my ballpark.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Does anybody have any experiences, whether it's learning mindfulness, practicing mindfulness, that they feel would be valuable to share with the group?
I don't want to monopolize the conversation, but I can share a couple of thoughts.
Okay.
For me, what is attractive about mindfulness is that its applications are very, very wide. And what I mean by that is just learning to practice mindfulness helps one both personally and also professionally, whether it's a clinical session, whether it's a coaching session, or whether it's even relating to your kids.
Right.
So I think I see mindfulness as a very critical skill to develop for ourselves universally.
It is, and it's a skill that anybody can develop, and they can use that in any place.
Right.
They really can. And we have a question here from Nancy Patrick. Is she on the line? And it's star 6 to unmute. She asked the question, is mindfulness exercise done during a session? It can be. If that is something that your client would like to develop, you can guide them through a mindfulness exercise, whether it's having them scan how their body feels, whether that's eating something. There's different ways where you can do exercises, or it could be that they go and they Google a video on mindfulness that has exercises, and then they can practice that on their own. And they could even do that as a goal for the week and then come back and share the experience and what they learned and how can they integrate that into their goals. Are there any other questions on that? If a client wants to develop mindfulness,
This is Donna. I work with a lot of children who have some anxiety issues, and so in a group setting, I've done some relaxation techniques and visualizations. And what is always very cool, especially working with children because they're so open, when I do a visualization and they have their eyes closed and we're walking through it and feeling and breathing and sensing and smelling, and at the end, and it might only be like 10 minutes, but what is very apparent is that there's a energy shift in the room. You know, I can feel that. And when they allow themselves to completely, fully experience the experience, they come out of it refreshed and actually amazed that they were able to get that deep so quickly. And for many of them, you know, with anxiety issues, they're all over the place. So for them to just kind of stay grounded for a little bit is just, an exceptional opportunity for them to see that body-mind connection.
Yes.
It is. And it really is amazing how quick kids pick up on things.
Mm-hmm.
They make the connection. They make the connection and they just have this gift of integrating much quicker than us adults, so it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they go into that state of being rather than doing.
Right.
So when you are having this experience with the kids, what do you do to teach them how to keep this place, keep this presence when they leave?
I ask them to practice it at home. We start with deep breathing, so I ask them to maybe show their parents how we're breathing, and then it's a series of sessions. So maybe 4 or 6 weeks, once a week, we get together. So we continue to practice it so that it becomes more natural for them, and they actually really look forward to it.
Right, and you brought up probably the most important point, which is breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Breathing. Breathing helps bring us into the present moment. And that's actually a really good exercise to do, is breathing deep. You know, what does that feel like when your chest expands and contracts and you feel the air going down into your lungs? And anytime there's anxiety or there's judgment, just taking a moment to breathe and help bring yourself back into the present. That is the quickest and the most effective way to do it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's pranayama and yoga, and that's one of the most effective ways to begin your day.
Right. Recently, I went for a massage for a tight muscle, and she was working on the area that was just really knotted up, and she had to remind me to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how we'll forget to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
but if we allow ourselves to breathe. And when I allowed myself to breathe, I was able to release that pain and that tension that was in my muscle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the letting go part.
In all these alternative treatments, whether it's a massage or foot reflexology or yoga or, anything, or even just visual imagery, relaxation or anything, I think the whole bit about breathing and that is the essence of mindfulness, I think.
Right. It's just coming into being where we are right now. And, looking at it, experiencing it, being a part of it rather than being somewhere else. And we're always having conversations in our head. And learning how to quiet that chatter down and really experience what is happening now is a wonderful thing, not just for ourselves as the coach, in our practice and in our personal life, but is really a gift that we can extend to our clients and to the people around us.
Mm-hmm.
And we are getting close on time, so are there any other questions that we have out there the last couple minutes?
Hello, this is Rhonda. I understand that much of this is experiential and kind of having the right framework, but if you were referring to another source like articles or a good book around mindfulness, what would you recommend?
I recommend anything that is written by Jon Kabat-Zinn.
How do you spell the last name?
K-A-E-A-T. Separate word, Z-I-N-N.
Okay, thank you.
Can you repeat that last name for me, please?
Kabat-Zinn, Kabat-Zinn. He's been practicing it for over 40 years. He's also a physician, and he has some excellent books out there. You can also Google mindfulness. You can YouTube to find videos on exercises to learn more about it. And if you ever have the opportunity to take a class or a workshop, I highly recommend that. Even if you are experienced in mindfulness, it's great to develop that skill further.
Another good book is The Mindful Coach by Doug Silsby.
And how do you spell that last name?
S-I-L-S-B-E-E. And he has a wonderful website as well.
I haven't read that. I'll have to. That definitely sounds like that would pertain to this call. Well, I want to thank all of you for coming to the call today and taking time out of your busy days. And I hope you got something out of the call. And I encourage all of you to think of one thing to do this week that you can do every day, even just for a couple minutes, to allow yourself to really be in the present and experience everything that's going on around you.
Thank you so much. That was very helpful, and thank you for all your insights.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you for being a part of the call. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Bye.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.